Siyagodola man, this aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness.
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a shape.
Sergeant at arms, can you please come
on the
in?
Point of order.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this week's edition of Sunday Times Politics Weekly with me, Amil Amrao. Guys, thank you so much for joining us once again. I can officially say welcome to thousands of our viewers that we have listening to us. We have grown, guys. We have grown. Thank you so much for your support. I'm joined in the studio this week by the usual team, Zingisa Mvumvu, Zimasa Matiwane, and Apiwe de Klerk. Guys, how are you guys doing this week? All good?
We are ecstatic, my man. Thousands and thousands listening to our podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
So, just to celebrate this and to sort of take it off and launch it from where we are, we're going to be dividing this podcast down into three segments. It's going to be very exciting just to give you guys a better experience of our very different sort of analysis that we do here at Sunday Times Politics Weekly. We're going to be breaking down the podcast into three sections. The first is titled The Good, The Bad, and The Newsworthy. It's going to be a short segment from the newspaper on a big story that the Sunday Times reported on the past weekend, or it's going to be a topical story of the day. The second segment is going to be the story of the week, and that's going to be the big story that's making news headlines throughout the week. And the last segment, it's going to be called What to Expect When You're Unsuspecting. And this is where we give you a bit of a throw forward into what you can expect to happen in the political environment in the week that's coming. So guys, thank you so much for joining us. Let's kick it off. I hope you guys like the new orientation of the podcast. Give us any comments you have, any criticism. You can get a hold of us on Twitter at hashtag STPoliticsWeekly. Let us know what you think. Let's give it a go this week, guys. Let's start off. Let's talk about the 8 members of parliament that have so far resigned because they did not make it into cabinet positions. Let's list them very quickly for our listeners. We've got Batsibile Dlamini, we've got Derek Honeycomb, Noma India Mfeketu, Dipaula Tsatse Duba, Susan Sabangu, who else? Tukuzile Xhosa, Siyabonga Ngwele, and Jeff Radebe.
Batsibile Dlamini.
Yeah, Batsibile Dlamini. So there's been about 8 in total so far.
Former ministers.
Former ministers who have resigned from parliament because they didn't make Cyril's cut into cabinet. Now, for me, and I think a lot of people will also agree, that it's better to retire on the pension of a cabinet minister rather than that of a member of parliament, because the salary difference is massive. I think it's about 800,000 rand, I think, per year. So they're going to retire with all their benefits. Guys, what do we think? I'm sure we're happy to see some of these guys gone out of parliament. Or guys or girls.
Okay, never mind about being happy or being what.
Yeah.
But the one who resigned with a bang was Batsibile Dlamini decided that she's bored by reading these stories that another MP has resigned. So she must give us an actual story. But yeah, you're right. This all, every 5 years you have this. The other time where you had this was when then President Jacob Zuma did that massive reshuffle and a number of former ministers decided, but no, we will rather quit as MPs. One person who didn't at the time was Derek.
Yes, Derek Hanekom.
Derek Hanekom didn't at the time. Yeah, but he's quit now. Stories that he's not just quitting because of pension. There's somewhere else that he's
somewhere
going.
Else he's going. I saw his tweet saying that he's excited for future prospects. I also saw Batsibile Dlamini's letter that she wrote, her resignation letter, where she basically says that she's been vilified by the media, attributing blame wherever she can for her stance. However, if you remember, Dlamini was accused of failing to ensure that SASSA was equipped to administer social grants after the contract with Cash Paymaster Services was due to expire. This was about 2 or 3 years ago. And the Constitutional Court was forced to extend, I mean, the courts at the time were forced to extend the contract, even though it had been found illegal. Then the Constitutional Court, when the case was taken there, described her conduct as, and I'm quoting here, reckless and grossly negligent, saying that she failed to disclose information before an inquiry into her role into the social grants debacle. So Batsibile is not one who is free from scandal. And for her to blame the media and vilify them, do you guys think that's a bit excessive? Her finding excuses for leaving.
Look, there will always be excuses. I mean, she, you know, one part of her rant that I would say I agree with is that she cannot be the only one to blame for such a mess that was with regards to that. I mean, we had a president, for heaven's sake, at that time, which was Mr. Jacob Zuma. And we had a whole cabinet, you know. And I mean, really, although, yes, that service is part of the social development which she headed, but I doubt that when colleagues see that someone is struggling or someone is veering off the road as far as something is concerned, that's why there are cabinet meetings whereby ministers and president calls ministers into order. All of them failed in that regard, but the buck stops with the person who's taken the responsibility, which is her, you know. So generally, yes, it's, I mean, the whole letter and the rant is political. It's all, you know, sour grapes. Yeah, I mean, I'm not shocked at all. But yes. Tabide is like that. She's a street fighter. One thing that doesn't shock me is that she decided to, you know, to take the jump this way, unlike others who just said we can't declare reasons. She's a street fighter. It's going to be interesting what she gets up to going forward. But one thing I can say, you cannot write her off just yet.
Here's a big question for you, Zabosa. Are we going to miss any of these eight MPs who have resigned?
Yeah, of course. Of course, there are some that we're going to miss. But you know what? It's a job.
Yeah.
And there is no one who is irreplaceable in a place of work. We can, you know, only hope that the incoming ones are going to be as capable and do as good in portfolios where there are ministers who are doing what. Why is everyone looking at me?
I want the names of the just two people you are going to miss.
No.
I just want just the two.
There's actually two people that I'm going to miss very, very dearly, but I won't mention them. Yeah, there are people that I'm sad to see go that I thought, you know, could still offer the country more. But I mean, there's a lot of other people who can do the work. So, yeah. But I'm going to miss Batavile and her drama also.
But you saw, as Mvumvu was saying about Batavile specifically, later yesterday, I'm not sure which radio station she gave an interview, maybe it's SABC, saying that next year, the NGC, National General Council of the ANC, which reviews the implementation of the policies that they took in the previous conference, it's not just going to be business as usual.
No, of course not. It's going to be the fight back campaign against her.
Yeah, people will have to account. And she spoke about the issue, which is currently very contentious in the ANC, the issue of the nationalization of the Reserve Bank. Mm. So already, as she's stepping off, she's saying, the gloves are off.
Of course, we must remember that Batsibile Dlamini is still the president of the ANC's Women's League. So she still commands a great deal of force within the ANC, doesn't she?
The ANC Women's League, for that matter, just to add, is the only functional league of the ANC at this moment. Fully functional. She's got a tight grip on it. Has in control almost the entire executive, but most importantly, has a control of the SG of the ANC Women's League. I mean, you can just imagine now, both of them are probably going to be based at Luthuli House. Mm. So they're going to have much more contact
than
before. You know, so really, but I mean, in fact, politically now, she may be stronger than ever before in terms of the structures of the ANC. But still on this topic, I mean, the point that I wanted to add in terms of this resignation, you know, what disturbs me, of course, you correctly put it that these people are chasing, you know, the pensions to buy. But, you know, what does this symbolize?
Yes.
It symbolizes a culture of an ANC that's got people who want to serve for self-enrichment.
Of course.
Because it doesn't mean just because now you've, if you were in it selflessly to serve the people, actually Parliament, people need to stop reducing Parliament into something that doesn't matter. Parliament is actually very powerful because that's where policies and everything is, you know, started. So, and you need people of experience on things like that. People in terms of the culture and values of the ANC who've got institutional memory, you know. But now when they're resigning en masse like this, the ANC runs a risk of just having, you know, yes, they will have all these young people that are there, but these young people can't make that much of a contribution in terms of a parliament. Parliament, you actually need more senior people than young people to drive.
I ask a question? Yes. What contribution do you think Batabile was going to make there? In which committee, for example?
I will answer. Don't laugh. No, for instance, for instance, Ubatabile, let's leave the politics and the character alone, but Ubatabile is very firm and has got, I think, her understanding of women issues is very much important.
I'm a woman, I don't think so, but continue.
Okay, yes. you see, she led that women's league delegation that had men.
Men.
Come on, comrades.
That was an entire confidence vote on herself.
You can't say such people don't have a contribution to make at all. Those people have got a contribution. Actually, now that you are reducing them to something that doesn't have the many packs that they have, they would begin to do the real work and you will begin to see their real potential. Because this thing of being driven around by blue lights as a minister, you are not serious. All you do is going around cutting ribbons.
And finding men to speak on behalf of women.
You see, your point about institutional memory, about understanding lawmaking, the processes that it takes, and instilling discipline on the young ones who would have come to parliament in those portfolio committees, I agree with you. Just the person you used as an example,
I'm not using Batabile into my conversation. Yes, I was saying all these people, Jeff, with all that kind of experience, actually, Jeff has been a minister in justice, has been a minister in the president, has been a minister of SOEs, all that kind of knowledge. Imagine the contribution that Jeff would make in those portfolio committees in shaping their policy going forward.
Yeah, but because Jeff must go stay with his kids now.
So comrades, it's worrying. But what the point that I wanted to emphasize is that now we know the kind of the cater that the ANC has.
I can agree with that. It's self-serving.
Yeah.
Because it just shows that if you can't get that sort of the cabinet position that you've been striving for and doing politics for,
guys,
you're going to leave.
You guys are being unfair. So when you are a reporter here, you get to be a politics editor and then somehow you get demoted, you go to be a writer, and then would you take that job?
I would take it. Why not?
Don't be unfair.
But comrades, seriously, politics, the thing is, ANC presents itself as this movement of the people.
Yes, the movement of the people.
Yeah,
but we know it's not.
Yes, and this is the clearest indication that the ANC is a bunch of self-serving individuals that we need to examine going forward properly.
Mvumvu, what I would agree with you in is that, you are nominated, you accept the nomination. After you accepted the nomination, when you've served since 94, you must know what the likelihood is that I've got so much that I stand to benefit when I resign as an MP and from cabinet. So you should have just resigned then if you felt that you can't do the job. You see what I'm saying?
I don't know what you're saying, Chief. People must resign at the peak of the money.
What I'm saying is that if former Minister Jeff Radebe thought that he is not ready to go to Parliament and serve as an ordinary MP, he should not have accepted the nomination for an MP.
But you said it also speaks...
What if some of those people who voted for the ANC, when they saw the list... and they looked at Jeff Radebe is coming back, Batabile is coming back, Mildred Oliphant. Okay, Mildred Oliphant is not resigned.
Yeah.
Who else? Susan Shabangu. All of those, and even Mama Action. They was like, I'm voting for the ANC based on this caliber of people. And now you all resign.
And these are the people that I believe will represent my aspiration in Parliament in terms of the policies that will shape how this government performs. And guys, all of a sudden now...
it means they are there for the politics of the stomach.
And not only that, but further, they are entitled to positions. People think they will die minister. Jeff has been a minister since 1994. For the first time, he's being dropped. He is throwing tantrums all around.
Lastly, I understand that some of them may have had negotiations probably with the SG or the president, and they may have been told that they, at a later stage they will be deployed somewhere else.
But even those conversations, self-entitlement, why do you believe that being just an ordinary MP is not good enough for you? You must be an ambassador or a minister. That's not the culture of the ANC, as we know it.
No, but if the president of the country is saying, I recognize your skill and I think you will serve
as
best.
No, but I doubt the president would go to them. I'm sure they go to him, but...
Guys, let's move on
from this. We're going to take a quick break and stay tuned with us, because when we come back, we're going to be getting into the story of the week. And this week, that's going to be Public Protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane. Stay tuned.
Ntelo hambe uyofuna umsebenzi.
Young people are making their mark. Get up. Yenza umehluko ngimpilo yakho.
Tune into the Sebenza Live Behind the Hustle podcast every Tuesday to find out more about what fascinating careers are out there. You can find us on the Sowetan Live website,
or you can follow us on Twitter on Sebenza Live.
Sebenza boy.
Sebenza girl.
Sebenza.
Yavamtana.
Welcome back. Let's get into it. Public Protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane has come out this week on Twitter with a whole long, I've never seen such a long rant before, defending her investigation into Pravin Gordhan and a whole bunch of other issues. She was going on about Christianity. She was going on about religion. I can't even remember all of it right now. But at the crux of it, the latest news we have is that Mkhwebane has confirmed in a letter to DA leader Musi Maimane that President Cyril Ramaphosa is implicated in her investigation into the 500,000 rand donation received from Busasa CEO Gavin Watson. If we remember, last year the president answered in parliament that he had no idea what this 500,000 rand donation was, and then he then retracted to say that, yes, it was donated to his presidential campaign in 2017. Now, the president has also just sent out a statement saying that he has received Mkhwebane's notice, and that he has asked for an extension, and that he also wants to interview some of the witnesses in the investigation. Now, guys, it seems to me, the Ramaphosa thing, a lot of people have been speculating that maybe Mkhwebane is holding off until State of the Nation as a strategic sort of report that she wants to give out. But this is also not the first time the public protector has come in the spotlight for some of her investigations. I mean, if we look back at the Gordhan case, and I think that's the big one where people are sort of divided on Mkhwebane. A lot of people supporting her, some people like Julius Malema in the EFF and the sort of RET forces from before, and other people, some analysts, saying that actually she's overstepping her boundaries here and she's going after people with a political agenda. Let's take a quick look at Gordhan's case here, right? It basically revolves around that whole narrative around the rogue unit and also his pension payout to Ivan Pillay, who was at SARS at the time. Now, Gordhan has sort of been exonerated from these allegations. The Nugent report, there was an investigation, the commission that was held last year to look into what was happening at SARS, basically found that there was nothing wrong with the rogue unit. Yes, he said that they may have, some of its members may have been doing some things that was slightly illegal, but the formation of it under Gordhan, there was nothing wrong with it. So why then is our public protector still going after this issue, and should she be? What do you think?
Look, I mean, I think, first of all, the whole debate around Busisiwe Mkhwebane is highly, highly contaminated. It's against and for.
Yes.
I'm for or I'm against. People don't look into the facts and come into conclusions. For instance, the whole allegation that she's descended into the political arena, I think the office of the public protector during the Zuma years, based on its findings then, was politicized at that time. And people now, by merely complaint, because, I mean, there's nothing that the public protector can do if the complaint comes to her. She has to investigate and come to a conclusion, which can either you are cleared or you have been found to have been involved in maladministration. First of all, she only investigates maladministration, not criminal issues. So if people complain, people have seen that office since 2D as a political tool, and they're using it. And those, for me, that's not the public protector. But mm-hmm. those are complainants, people who choose to complain on certain things. I mean, the whole...
But can the public protector not dismiss a complaint if the complaint has already been found through an investigation? Like, if we look at Gordon's, and I'm not defending anyone here at all, but... what the Nugent Commission found last year, and I attended it, was that Tom Moyane had received legal opinion from senior counsel in late 2015 indicating that the establishment of the Rogue Unit was not unlawfully established. But Moyane didn't make this publicly available. He didn't report this. And then Nugent had said, and I'm going to quote him directly, "I find no reason why the establishment and existence of the unit was indeed unlawful, and I am supported in that by an opinion given to Mr. Moyane by leading senior counsel in late 2015. As far as I am aware, that opinion has never been publicly disclosed." So SARS, and in the form of Moyane, got a legal opinion at the time saying that the Rogue Unit, there was nothing wrong with it. Can the public protector not say, "Listen, guys, you guys have complained here about something, but senior counsel has already made a finding on this"?
Well, just quickly, Amil, addressing that. But you see, first of all, the state institutions have got different roles. Yeah. And also with that, there's been many inquiries, others, legal inquiries, commissions of inquiries on the same issue with different results. Sikakane said, yes, there was this thing. Kroon, who's the other one who retracted their thing, said there was but retracted. There's another one who said there wasn't. Now there's this. You see, when there's so much conflicting views like that, and the public protector has nothing to do with those things.
Yes.
She will just stick and confine herself to the terms of reference that empower her office to investigate and come to a certain conclusion. I doubt she'll come to the conclusion to say, yeah, no, there was never such a thing. She'll say, if there was such a thing, where all laws in terms of what empowers the minister or the commissioner at the time followed, if they were not, then she will issue a verdict, you know. So I guess that too is neither here nor there, especially on these, you know, issues where there's been too many investigations, you know. So essentially, my stance is that the office was politicized. I'm not saying the public protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane is not playing politics, but I'm saying the office was politicized during Madonsela's time, and people are taking advantage in terms of the image that it has built as a political tool, and they're using it to file complaints like that to embarrass their political opponents.
Look, I guess on the one of that you started with, she has not issued a finding.
Of course.
I'm a bit skeptical about, I'm a bit uneasy about going into a discussion with it, because we don't know what a finding is. Now, we have one where she has a finding.
Yes.
It's being taken to court.
Yes.
There has been a whole discussion.
Are you talking here about the Frieda Dairy Farm investigation?
No. I'm talking about the one about
the pension.
Okay. Pile.
Oh, Pile.
Yes.
So it's going to court.
Yes.
It's being challenged. So there's during this debate, what I'd found, there's people who are for her have been saying, look, why are you complaining that you are being investigated by the public protector? Because what's going to happen is that if you go there, you will present the evidence.
Yes, yeah.
If she wrongly finds you
yes.
to be guilty, you take it on appeal.
Yes.
And when it's on appeal, it's not just the High Court that is the avenue. You can go further.
Yes.
The SCA and even the Constitutional Court, if needs be. So why prevent it from happening?
I get you. When if you think that you are innocent,
yes.
you have a means to sort of get the truth out there or to prove yourself innocent. It's not that the public protector's report is sort of binding and the end of it all.
Yeah.
So those were the arguments for her.
Yeah.
But against her has always been the fact that, look, you are opening up a space for people like Pravin Gordhan to be dealt with by a faction who would say, this one must not go into cabinet because the public protester has found against him.
Yes.
And it has been a big issue because that report was released as the president was preparing to appoint a cabinet.
Mm.
So now, do you then say the timing of the release of the reports, is she really playing into politics or is it just coincidental?
And that argument has been there before.
I think the merits of the report and the avenue that Pravin has to challenge the report should be enough even for people who think that Obusi is playing politics.
But let's talk about this. I want to talk about this playing politics thing quickly. I'm going to get back to you.
I needed to make a last point. And I'm making this last point because then there's a very loud silence about the findings that he had made with people who either like Fikile Mbalula, with people like Malusi Gigaba. And I will give you another example where she, when everyone, including the ANC and even some factions within that said party, there's an MEC in the Western Cape whom she exonerated.
Yes.
So if she, and she was playing politics, and those politics were favoring ANC, outrightly she should have naturally found against
the Western Cape
then MEC of Human Segigen, Bongi Nkosi Madikizela, on an issue about a gift or rather a 3,000 rand cake in a birthday which was allegedly organized with the knowledge of someone who is his partner. So look, when you look at these things, you must look at it broadly like that. I'm not saying she's not she's not playing politics, neither am I saying she is, but I'm saying what do we use to judge her to say she's playing politics when there are other reports other than the ones that are pro the anti-Ramaphosa faction and the other ones that are anti them.
Okay, but here's the counter argument here, because I don't know if you guys remember her investigation into the Frieda Dairy Farm scandal, where she found that it sort of cleared all the high-profile politicians like Ace Makashule and Mosobenzi Zwane, who were involved in the scandal, and rather she found guilty the guys who were dealing with the administration at the municipality at administrative level. And then also in 2017, she released the outcome of an investigation into whether Absa Bank had benefited illegally from an apartheid-era bailout. And in that decision, she also recommended that the Reserve Bank should be changed, its mandate should be changed back then. So that's also playing into certain factions. But the thing I have to ask is, up here where I get you, you're saying that in some instances we can argue that she is, and in some instances it's showing that she's not playing into factions. But Zimasa, should there even be this? Because the public place is supposed to be independent in its entirety.
Like Umvumvu was saying, the office was politicized during Busisiwe Mkhwebane. That's when you started hearing factions of the ANC celebrating on this finding.
You mean during Thuli Madonsela?
Sorry, Thuli, during Thuli's. I think it's going to be very difficult to look
it now.
To go back and respect the office and the Chapter 9 institution, which we must all, because these women, they don't just sleep and dream findings and write them down.
Course.
You know, they are guided by the law. They are guided by the terms of references. And people take these reports on review. But also, you know, most of the time, we know that a lot of the times when there is corruption and there is a politician involved, the politician says the word and the official signs. So if Ace Nomsebenzi were sort of acquitted or cleared and the officials took the fall, then it wouldn't be a surprise. I wouldn't just assume that Obusi is protecting Ace for what?
No, it was different time. There was a lot of compelling evidence against those two.
I want to respond to a point you raised earlier. It will be too late. I'm just going to talk about what Zimasa was talking about. I'm going to take you back to an earlier case. You are taking us back to Julius Malema, who was being probed by Thuli Madonsela at the time, actually. And Thuli Madonsela at the time was new. At the time, a number of people had called her a Zuma appointee.
Yes.
And when she didn't find against Julius Malema, there was a whole lot of hoo-ha and whatnot. But when you then get to understand how politicians play around the business space, to this day, the NPA has not been able to get that guy to be arrested, despite that government having been placed under administration and whatnot. So, in hindsight, was she playing into politics, or there just wasn't evidence of Julius Malema? Or is Julius Malema really innocent of corruption in Limpopo?
Because he's ended off for us. Yeah, end off the section
and
for
you
us.
See, also, again, I mean, the perception. The thing is, also in South Africa, we have this strange thing that once we've built a perception about particular individuals, anything that doesn't confirm our perceptions, we dismiss it as incompetence and whatever. When we perceive certain people to be the saints and the innocent ones, and then someone finds them guilty, we lose our minds. If we perceive other people to be this corrupt bunch, criminals, crooks, and then they are absolved on a certain issue. For instance, now, Mabuza, in that same day when Advocate Mkhwebane was releasing the report on PG, she cleared Mabuza on two occasions. There is not even a noise there. Well, although people would have laughed, I can tell you there would have been a noise if DD, because there's this perception given his previous life as the Premier of Mpumalanga, that he's a crook. But Mkhwebane on that particular case absolved him. Actually, that case is so similar to the Estina one, because although Mabuza was cleared in those cases, but the administration, particularly the DG of Mpumalanga at the time, is fingered in those things because they are the ones that signed. But do you ignore the fact that the administration, the officials, could have taken the instruction from politicians? But in terms of evidence and
where's
proof,
evidence?
You will never have that. Thus, you absolve people. I can tell you now, if that is the case in terms of Estina, that officials, certain officials signed, although they might have taken the instruction, I'm not saying that is the case, from Ace, you will never find anyone who will get a proof of that. So that is the problem. We have this problem of perceptions with regards to the issue of timing that Tikleko was raising. That's the issue I wanted to respond to. Again, it goes back to this thing. I'm saying what we see today with the office are precedents that were set by Advocate Thulima Donsela, who was a celebrity, loved because of her findings against Zuma.
And which there was nothing wrong at the time.
Yeah, which I'm not saying
no one complained.
Was a lie, but because Zuma was the protagonist, the crook in terms of perception, the finding against him was a popular thing. As such, people ignored to question certain things. The report on Kandla was released on the eve of the 2014
elections.
And there are people, Gwede Mandashe was one of the most vocal people at the time, to say this is an agenda of Stellenbosch to deal with the ANC and remove the ANC from power. And Gwede was dismissed easily like that at the time to say, but it's neither here nor there. If there are findings and the time has come for them to be released, now is the time. So I think the issue of timing, if we had questioned it at the time and become principled as a country, we wouldn't have it a repeat.
Now it's a problem.
In fact, Busi saw that a precedent had been set, so she's like, I'm doing it. And she can easily defend herself to say, but Thuli did it too.
Yeah.
And nothing happened to her. So that's where I think we are. But I'm not saying Busi is neither innocent nor guilty. But I'm saying, last point. Also, finding wrongly is not a sin.
Yes, of course.
Because if that was the sin, you can't call for the removal of someone based on what they found against someone only. Because judges every day, and this is a simple argument, but people dismiss it. Simple argument that in magistrate court, there are magistrate court judges, high court judges who find wrongly every month or every year. Their judgments are overturned at the Supreme Court of Appeal and Constitutional Court. Who has ever called for their removal?
No one.
Exactly.
Appeal ended off first.
I think the debate around Busi, public protector Busi Mkhwebane, took a wrong turn. The debate was supposed to have been, I'm saying in the public, not here in the studio, about whether or not she's competent. Okay. In that, when you read the actual findings, I think those are the things that we should use to judge her. Mm. Not whether or not the finding is against Pravin Gordhan or Malusi Gigaba, whether it's against President Cyril Ramaphosa or against Helen Zille, for instance, because she has made a finding against her. So, say governance, or we had a new government after now, we would surely then have new people. She would have still been investigating these cases.
Absolutely.
So when we judge her, we must not look at personalities and factions of the ruling party at the time. We must look at the content of the report. And that one of on APSA, it's very suspicious. Yeah?
Of course.
Yeah.
This debate is on fire. It's amazing. We're going to take another ad break before we get into our last section. And when we get back, we're going to tell you what to expect when you're unsuspecting. Join us then.
Tune in to Cargumentative every Monday morning on Times Live Motoring. you can join myself, Thomas Faulkner, and my regular gang of automotive misfits as we discuss motoring news, views, and of course, have a cargument or two. That's Cargumentative, only on Times Live Motoring.
Welcome back. Now we're going to tell you what to expect when you're unsuspecting. And the big question of the week is the ANC's investigation into Ace Makashule for his alleged involvement in the formation of the African Transformation Movement. I think I remember one of our colleagues, Kaifas Tosana, back in the, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Mm.
He
Just before the elections.
Just before the elections. Yeah. He reported on this. But what has just come in is that as the ANC, this is for a story from EWN this morning, as the ANC prepared to investigate claims that its Secretary General was involved in the formation of ATM, the person who initially made the claims in court withdrew their case. The story says that the former General Secretary of the South African Council of Messianic Churches in Christ wrote a damning affidavit last month claiming that the former President Jacob Zuma and Makashule were involved in the party, but now he's withdrawn that statement. Let's talk about ACF for a second, guys. What can we expect going forward with the ANC and its relationship with its Secretary General right now?
This is going to be war, eh?
Yeah. You can see it. It's brewing.
You can see it, and it's going to be very nasty. You must remember, now there's a big fight about resolutions of NASREC. Now comes this to say, but this one was busy saying resolutions of the ANC, resolutions of the ANC. It's a matter of principle conference. Was there in the formation of a party that was in opposition of the ANC.
Yes.
It's going to be a very brutal fight. Ace is going to, is going to face a very difficult time.
What I like is that it's not an ACE investigation.
Yeah.
It's an investigation into whoever participated.
Mm.
So as far as we know, ACE was mentioned and then Baba was mentioned.
Yeah.
But now people are asking, what about COPE?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So I think they must go back as far as COPE and tell us everything if they want to tell us things. Yeah.
Sigisa?
Chief, just to write on what Tikek was saying, the bigger fight here, of course, I mean, not to say Ace didn't do or did whatever he's being accused of participating in the formation of the ANC, but the bigger fight here is over the soul of the ANC.
Mm.
There are two clear factions. I think the Reserve Bank thing showed us that indeed this whole unity thing is a farce.
Mm.
That the factions here, they're jostling for power and control of the ANC, and as things stand, they are toe to toe.
Yeah.
I would say, in closing, if they miss Ace with this particular investigation, my goodness, all hell would break loose from this point.
It's going to clap at them.
That's all we have time for this week, but we're probably going to tell you more about that story next weekend.
Yeah.
Next week, when you join us again, tell your friends, tell your family. This podcast, I think, is one of the most exciting, interesting political debates in the country right now. Guys, we're doing a really good job, but thank you all for listening in. You can catch us on Twitter at #STPoliticsWeekly. Please interact with us there. You can also find our podcast on our Times Live website under the Opinions and Analysis page. Guys, thank you so much for joining us again this week. Have a good one.